cameras and electronic gates at all entrances leading to the mosque area, closed most of the roads leading to it to Muslims, with the exception of one gate with strict military measures, closed the popular vegetable market, the Al-Khalil and Shahin Khans, and Al-Shuhada and Al-Sahla streets. With these measures, the old town was separated from its surroundings, measures that are still in place today and are even harsher. Their impact on the life of thousands of Palestinians who live in that area is very visible to anyone who goes there. The terrorist Baruch Goldstein, whose real name was Benjamin Goldstein, was 42 years old when he committed the massacre. He was one of the founders of the Jewish terrorist Kach movement. Goldstein was born in New York into an ultra-Orthodox Jewish family, and he got his education at the Jewish yeshiva schools in Brooklyn and got a degree in medicine from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine at Yeshiva University. He came to Palestine from the United States in 1980 and lived in Karat Arba settlement built on usurped Al-Khalil lands and houses the most extreme and racist settlers in the Palestinian occupied territories. According to Press TV, Al-Khalil is the biggest city in the West Bank and home to more than 200,000 Palestinians. About 1,000 Zionist settlers who engage in frequent attacks on Palestinians also live there under heavy military protection. Al-Khalil has seen regular unrest, and the Ibrahimi Mosque, believed to be the burial site of prophets including Abraham, is the focal point of tensions. In 1994, Zionist settler Baruch Goldstein killed 29 Palestinian Muslim worshippers inside the mosque with an assault rifle before being beaten to death by survivors.
Economic divide.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi in China, welcomed warmly, to say the least, by the Chinese President Xi Jinping, who rolled out the red carpet for Iran. Why is Iran important to China in the first place? Well, the Western media tried to put down this visit and play it down, but that wasn't the case. Hi, I'm Kavitar Voyi, and this is Economic Divide. Some of the highlights of this program coming up. First, Raisi and China, we're looking at 20 cooperation agreements that were signed. Also, operationalize a 25-year partnership agreement that's at the core of this relationship. Xi Jinping hailing Iran's solidarity during complex world situation. Another reason for the union of these two countries, U.S. sanctions, and ways to neutralize these sanctions is, of course, one of the goals. And also, other sanction-hit countries are uniting with China against the West, in particular the U.S. This means pivot to the East is in order. Another thing that's in order, sorry for the pun, a new world order comprising of Iran and Russia getting closer to China. Also, trade without a dollar is another goal, and this leaves the U.S. and the West alienated. First state visit by an Iranian president to China in more than 20 years. greeted by the Chinese President Xi Jinping on a red carpet, an extraordinary display of camaraderie between the presidents of the two countries. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said both governments have shown a will to enhance bilateral cooperation, despite opposition from their adversaries. He called for bigger steps to implement the 25-year cooperation agreement, saying this will contribute to peace and stability in the region and beyond.
We believe that implementing the 25-year cooperation agreement and realizing what agreed between the two countries' officials today to develop bilateral ties can promote regional and global peace and stability. Certainly, relations between Iran and China will not be affected by international developments, since we're determined to develop ties with China in any circumstances.
President Xi Jinping, for his part, said that Beijing would develop friendly cooperation with Iran no matter how international and regional situations change. Iran and China finalized the 25-year agreements back in 2021. The agreement will see China invest $400 billion into various fields of Iran's economy, including its oil, gas, and petrochemical industries. The agreement is reviving the Chinese One Belt, One Road initiative, which will see China's investment in global infrastructure in more than 150 countries and international organizations. Iran, with its strategic, geopolitical, and geographical location, is also a key part of that massive project. Time now to review some social media posts on this historic visit by the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi to China. First up, President Xi Jinping. He held talks with President Ebrahim Raisi on his state visit to China, no matter how the international and regional situation evolves. China will unswervingly develop friendly cooperation with Iran. Next, new axis of powers, Iran, Russia, and China. That's something for the U.S. to think about, obviously. Then this post, Xi and Raisi signed 20 agreements on various sectors, including trade, technology, infrastructure, agriculture. China and Iran already have a 25-year strategic partnership deal. De-dollarization is also a big part of this oil for yuan. Then, Iran's presence, Raisi, in China, consolidating what's called an axis. U.S. sanctions system is almost obsolete now, as the Islamic Republic's back is covered by the Chinese economy. The Obama-Biden geopolitics with Iran have failed. Iran is part of a super Asian axis. This particular viewer seems to think so. We wasted time. All right, that was a snippet of some of the viewer comments on this topic. Let me introduce our guest for this segment of our Q&A. Ahmad Salih joins us. He's a political and economic analyst. Ahmad Salih, welcome to Economic Divide. We're taking a look at this visit. Obviously, it's a historic visit, unless you listen to some of the Western media that downplayed the significance of this visit. But why do you think relationship has been forged and has reached a level that it did, as evident from this visit? Because we're looking at what lies at the core of this, which is that 25-year comprehensive agreement that the two countries signed, which brings about a general question, and it's a simple one. Why is Iran important to China, do you think?
When Iran is a member of SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, after 20 years of bureaucracy and waiting, it has, I think, a very clear message for the decision makers over Atlantic and even in Europe, because SCO is more a security organization. Taking into account that there was a publication in 2013 by U.S. Council Intelligence, a think tank based in Washington, and the name of the publication was Global Trend 2030. So, National Intelligence Council. And this think tank is among those top-ranking think tanks in the United States. One of the mega trends in that publication, a 170-page one publication in 2013, was that in 2030, it was a perspective of the world, how will the world will look like in 2030. One of the mega trends was that U.S. will not be a hegemonic power, and power will shift to networks and coalitions in a multipolar world. And now, after 8 years, after 9 years, we are witnessing that this prediction has come true.
All right, that's a good point that he raises there in terms of the type of countries that have actually formed relationship where they can, accelerate to what our guest there, Hamad Saleh, said. Inar Tangen joins us. He's a senior fellow of the Tahe Institute. He's the founder and chairman of China City's Blue Book Consulting, who joins us now to see whether he agrees with Hamad Saleh. Inar Tangen, welcome to Economic Divide. Our guest there talks about how there is this unity that's happening between countries that kind of goes against the Western state of orders. But in terms of the way that Iran fits in with China, when we want to take a look at the relationship that they have forged, obviously there are lots of pluses for each country that it serves the other country's interest. But it comes also as a bulwark against the West, perhaps. Maybe you can define this relationship a little bit more for us.
Well, all countries are important to China, quite frankly. I mean, China's deals in trade and not politics. So, but there's a tremendous amount of sympathy for Iran because of the same issues that are facing China in terms of the sanctions from the United States in particular. And also because the U.S. unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA. I think from China's perspective, if you're going to have an international rule of law, there has to be some ability to count on countries following through with promises they made, whether it's the JCPOA or whether it's the Paris Climate Accord, or the Kyoto Climate Accord, or many other treaties and understandings that were entered into by the United States.
Time now for the InfoNews section of the program. We pick four items for you to review. Let's get started. First up, we're going to take a look at poverty in the United States. The numbers are pretty shocking, but it's been that way for a while, in which about 37 million people are classified as being poor. Now, what's new about this report is it says 3.4 million more people are living in poverty for the year 2022 than for the year 2021. So that figure, 37, is an increase that's included with the 3 million people. So it used to be roughly around 34 million people. Now, next up, not really that new, but the Saudi membership to the BRICS nation is something that's noteworthy because that will elevate the BRICS membership, obviously, to a higher level because they are keen. The kingdom is keen to join BRICS. And also SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Moscow's ambassador to the kingdom, has said that Riyadh is looking to diversify its foreign policy. Quick reminder over here, Algeria, Argentina, and Iran also have asked to join BRICS. So you can see that this grouping of countries is becoming quite relevant. Now, this piece of news we picked because it's important based on the earthquakes that happened in Turkey, but in particular in Syria, the U.S. sanctions on that country. Well, Syria has lost, first of all, anywhere from $70 billion to $100 billion in oil revenues. Now, aside from that, you have things like electricity rationing happening in that country where it has reached its highest level. Some areas only have 1 hour of electricity. You should just imagine how they are dealing with that in this time where the earthquake has made things just that much more worse. And there have been calls, growing calls, for the sanctions to be lifted, especially the Caesar sanctions. And our final item, European job losses. It's something that's continuing. It's a developing story almost, but it's important. In this case, Ford has slashed thousands of jobs in Europe as it is eyeing electric future. Job losses over the next 3 years, they're going to include some 2,300 positions in Germany and also 1,300 in the UK. Both countries are suffering from somewhat of an economic crisis, which this adds to it. Those were the four topics that we picked.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The in-depth section of this program is upon us, and our focus, China's Belt and Road Initiative. We're going to take a look at this initiative in the context of Iran and West Asia. Now, 2023 marks the 10-year anniversary of China's Belt and Road Initiative, the world's largest and most comprehensive trading network. First, as of August of 2022, you have 149 countries so far around the world that have signed up to work with China. Together, these countries account for up to 40% of the global GDP and a whopping $21 trillion U.S. dollars. Now, the goals of this massive project are actually quite simple. Increase trade amongst the member countries, reduce trading costs, and also to work together to grow the global trade. Okay? Now, it's worth looking at the Belt and Road Project's span geographically and in that respect where Iran stands in this mega project. Iran, Turkey, and then to Europe, and of course parts of West Asia, along with Africa, is where the maritime route takes this. In terms of this project, the mega aspect of it, and in terms of the cities that's going to be impacted, all across these routes is how that's going to happen. And of course, Iran's geographic location at the center of this project and its accessibility from four different directions to different areas of the world. But there's a much bigger goal that needs to be met, and that is what China's Belt and Road Initiative is doing. It concerns the needs of developing nations. This is why it's important. Developing nations, they need $40 trillion. That map was developing nations. Belt and Road Initiative is comprised of that. $40 trillion by the year 2035 to help them with infrastructure needs, which will in turn help with their economy and with their trade. Okay? So that's very important. Now, why did China zoom in on these developed nations? Well, this fact is an eye-opener, but this is the reason. 85% of the world population lives in these four regions, namely Africa, Asia, West Asia, and Latin America. However, this 85% of the world population and that geographic area receives only 15% of the attention. Okay? Obviously, it shows the amount of potential there is there for trade. Next, how can these countries then get there? Because it's not just about the money that's needed for investment. Well, China's investment in countries that are major oil and gas producers is one of the main pillars of the Belt and Road Initiative. And in that respect, that's why Iran is a good fit in this project, because it is a major oil and gas producer. Now, mind you, there are other countries that are also major oil and gas producers, like Saudi Arabia. All right? Let's find out what our guest thinks. Inor Tangen rejoins us. He's a political analyst, a geopolitical analyst, in order to shed his thoughts on this. Inor Tangen, welcome back. When you take a look at the Belt and Road Project, as I just covered it, it is something that is major in terms of the span, the geographic span that it covers. At the same time, you have countries that are part of this, either the land route or the maritime route. But in the bigger picture of things, how is this project important, especially when it comes to countering the West or the U.S. In terms of how they are excluded from it?
As you know, many countries feel that the hegemony of the U.S. is slowly declining, in part from its own actions. But you can divide this up basically: the global South and Central Asia, Russia, parts of the Middle East, obviously part of the global South, they are moving away from the U.S.-led order. You can see that quite plainly in the U.N. votes that are being recorded. Increasingly, it's not running towards Russia or China. It is simply not agreeing with the U.S., whether it's sanctions on Ukraine or the U.S. position that it is above the law when it comes to the ICC or any other kind of trade or political agreements. So it, unfortunately, is a time of turmoil where countries are trying to figure out how they're going to fit into this multipolar reality while the U.S. continues to cling to this idea that it should maintain hegemony in the interest of American exceptionalism. There's a lot of restiveness about the U.S. weaponizing the SWIFT banking system, which had been initially set up. It was promised that it would never be weaponized by one country, especially the U.S., in terms of its economic interests. Obviously, that has changed, and the U.S. has done that. Therefore, most countries are looking for alternatives to the economic domination of the U.S. dollar.
All right, that was Einar Tangen. We're going to have Hamad Salih rejoin us here to get his take on this, to find out what he has to say, especially regarding what Einar Tangen there said. Well, Mr. Salih, welcome back to our program. I mean, we just had our guest there talk about a new world order, and I'd like to find out what you think about the way that Iran fits into that when it comes to an economic powerhouse like China, in terms of fitting into an equation that runs counter to what the U.S. has done, being a hegemon. And of course, we're looking at different areas, such as moving away from the dollar being one of those ways that the U.S. and China, I'm sorry, that China and Iran equate with each other. We should put Russia in there. Can you tell us a little bit more about this new world order that's taking shape?
As I said, after 2008 and all of those printed money out of thin air by Federal Reserve, I think Chinese made the historic decision to not play on the same field, because they already knew that they will be the loser, because the Americans created $1.25 trillion base money out of thin air in one single year, and they started to interfere in the market, purchase or direct asset purchase. They just purchased the share of private entities, which we know that according to the capitalism, it is a red line. I mean, this amount or this volume of interference of the government into the free market is or has been the red line for the past 80 years, but they crossed it in a very, very significant volume. So that was a turning point, 2008, for the Chinese. So they decided to change the playground and to bring a new financial system, but very steadily in a Chinese form. So they started to accumulate gold, as the Russian also did during the past 20 years. And then in 2008 and 2009, the Chinese started to create currency swap agreements with many or several central banks in the world.
Tehran-Beijing cooperation has only been growing over the past couple of years. China has now become Iran's largest trading partner, with figures showing volume of trade between the two to have risen by over 40% in the previous Iranian calendar year, which ended on March 20. China's President Xi Jinping visited Saudi Arabia late last year in a bid to expand its influence in the South Asia region. The visit was received positively by Saudi Arabia. Beijing and Riyadh have agreed to do their oil trades in China's yuan in a shift away from the dollar, something which sanctioned-hit countries like Iran, Russia, and China are also doing. The expansion of economic and trade ties between China and Iran, especially in the face of U.S. sanctions, can significantly boost the joint effort to counter U.S. hegemonic ambitions in the West Asia region.
The Iran Iran-China relationship is just one of the fronts that Iran intends to increase its trade volume, and this is defined in the Iran-China 25-year comprehensive agreement. This was signed last year and includes economic, military, and security cooperation. The agreement will look for China to invest $400 billion and to increase bilateral trade tenfold to $600 billion in the next decade. Another move by Iran, which was finalized last year, was Iran's membership at the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. The population of the SCO member countries combined is 3.33 billion, or 42.49% of the world's population. The combined GDP of the eight member states is $23 trillion, or 24.2% of the global GDP. Acceptance of Iran as a full member of SCO will open up a new horizon of multilateralism. It will be beneficial not only for Iran, but for the whole region. Another massive agreement that Iran has signed is with Russia, the 20-year comprehensive partnership agreement. Tehran intends to increase its trade volume with Russia to $25 billion. In addition to its economic potential, Iran views the 20-year agreement as a way to solidify its security cooperation with Russia and secure new arms deals like the purchase of Russian-made Sukhoi 35 fighter jets. Iran has also shown interest in the Eurasian Economic Union, which has Russia as one of its founding members. This is an integrated single market of 184 million people and a gross domestic product of over $1.9 trillion, in which Iran has created a free trade zone between the Union. And finally, Iran has applied to another bloc that includes China and Russia, and that is the BRICS group of nations. BRICS is an important grouping bringing together the major emerging economies from the world, comprising of 41% of the world population, having 24% of the world GDP and over 16% share in the world trade. BRICS countries have been the main engines of global economic growth over the years. That does it for this Quick Take segment.
It was the in-depth section of this program, which did not leave much for saying after that presentation. The U.S. and its allies, but more so the U.S., is trying to disrupt the world order by targeting China and its Belt and Road Initiative. When 85% of the world lives in Africa, Asia, West Asia, and Latin America, but receives only 15% of the attention, and when China is trying to advance a project to help the needs of these countries, what's so wrong with that? And Iran is there to be the engine of growth by providing it with oil and gas for all these projects. That is how Iran's relationship with China can be defined. That does it for this edition of the program. Really enjoyed having you with us. From Mikhail Vitakvay and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand. In the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. I feel a little bit sick. I think I have a cold. I have a sore throat and feeling exhausted. But I have the remedy here in my bag. No, it's not a pill. It's dried Akium herbal tea. Just need some hot water. Have to take it from the train's restaurant. Iranian traditional medicine dates back to over 3,000 years ago. This medicine is based on the teachings of great Iranian physicians and scientists like Ibn Sina, Zakaria Razi, and many others whose books are being taught in European universities. Forget, my today's destination is Fathabad Garden in Kerman. This garden is not just a historical monument, it's also the biggest complex for growing medicinal herbs in Iran. That's wonderful! Fathabad Garden is a beautiful garden located 25 kilometers from the city of Kerman, southeastern Iran. This garden, which covers an area of over 13 hectares of land, dates back to the Qajarid era. The construction of the garden took about 5 years for Biglar Begi, who was the governor of Kerman, and decided to build it for recreational purposes. According to historians, this pattern has been used for constructing Shazde Garden in Mahan. This garden consists of different parts, including the mansion, the ruler's museum, painting room, four-season mansion, southern structures of the main mansion, and the fields which grow medicinal herbs. Fathabad Mansion is the most beautiful structure in the garden, and the painting room, where the most valuable and impressive collection of the entire mansion is displayed, is the most beautiful room of this mansion. after drinking the Akium herbal tea. Guess what? Now I am in the area of the garden. And I wish you were here to see what a beautiful mansion is just across from me. Let's take a tour around the garden. As soon as you step inside the garden, a pool takes your attention. The reflection of the mansion with its lights in the pool is worth watching. Oh, it's mesmerizing. And there are beautiful plants and flowers around. And there is a very special resident in Fatabad Garden that lives there for quite a long time. A very old berry tree, which is inside the mansion. When the construction of the building started, there was this old tree in the middle of the area. But the architect decided not to cut this berry tree off, and instead, he managed to build the place without any harm to the tree. Interesting. And this is the mansion. Magnificent. It's professionally designed and made. This mansion is made of adobe and mud and is covered by plaster. These arcades are really beautiful. On top of the entrance of the mansion, there are holes which used to supply the light by the magnifiers which were hidden inside. Amazing. Let's enter. I am now in the ruler's museum. This part of the mansion is like a time machine. Oh, look. There are the biography and pictures of the former rulers of Kerman in the old days. And let me take a look at the painting room. Oh God, fascinating. There are valuable and breathtaking paintings all over the room. Wow, it's unique. Other important items in this building are its stuccos. They are very beautiful. They are on one of the entrances of the building. Look, there is a field for growing medicinal herbs here in the area of the garden. Such a great field at the heart of a historical garden. Any herb you could think of. Here's like the combination of history and remedy. Actually, history is a remedy itself. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women, as human beings, are completely equal in Islam. This is part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 4th, 2023. I've repeated this on numerous occasions during the Eid al-Fitr prayers in the Eid al-Fitr sermon or in the ceremonies that are held in the month of Ramadan, and there were women who were covered in different ways in these ceremonies and were shedding tears. I envy them for shedding tears like that. I tell myself that I wish I could shed tears like that girl or that young woman. How can you make accusations against such a person? Yes, not observing the hijab properly or having inadequate form of hijab is not the right thing to do, but this does not mean that we should exclude these individuals from religion and the revolution and consider them to be outsiders. Why should we do such a thing? We all have certain flaws that we need to correct. The more flaws we correct, the better. This was another issue that had to do with the subject of hijab. One issue that I don't have time to talk about, unfortunately, is the service that the Islamic Republic has provided to women. This should not be forgotten.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I don't think any of you have seen the period before the revolution. I have spent almost half of my life in the period before the revolution. In the pre-revolution period, there were very few women who were wise, intelligent, educated scholars, researchers and experts in various fields. There are all these female university professors, all these female specialists and consultants in the medical sciences, and all these research scientists in different departments. When I say different departments, there are places that I have actually visited and seen for myself. Intelligent female scientists are working in advanced scientific and technological areas. Such a thing did not exist before the revolution. This is an outcome of the revolution. We have all these female university students. In some years, the statistics have shown that there were more female students than male students. There is much meaning in this. There is all this intense desire to study and gain knowledge.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Gave me hope, oh, Allah.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Condemning the recent resolution to the United Nations against Moscow, the Russian authorities announced that the West, by exploiting Ukraine, seeks to destroy Russia and take away its independence. They said these efforts are doomed to fail. In response to Russia's special operation in Ukraine, the United States and Western countries have imposed extensive sanctions against Moscow and sent billions of dollars of weapons and military equipment to Kiev. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Russia Today, the RT network, has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations General Assembly has asked Russia to withdraw its troops from Ukraine and prioritize on finding a diplomatic solution to the crisis in the former Soviet state as the US imposed fresh sanctions on Moscow. A two-thirds majority of the United Nations body, who met for a special session of the United Nations General Assembly on Thursday, 23rd of February, voted 141 for and 7 against, while the rest, including heavyweights China, India and Iran, chose to abstain from the vote in favour of a resolution that demanded Russian troops withdraw from Ukraine. Vasily Nebenzia, Moscow's permanent envoy to the organisation, said following the resolution passed on Thursday, the non-binding anti-Russian resolution of the UN General Assembly will not bring the world closer to ending the Ukraine conflict. Ahead of the vote, Vasily Nebenzia slammed it as detrimental to the prospects of ending the conflict. The Russian diplomat said, "How can United Nations members aid a peaceful resolution to the heightened contradictions between Russia and the West? We can say with certainty the tabled resolution will surely not help." The UN General Assembly rejected an amendment proposed by Belarus that urged countries to refrain from sending weapons to the zone of the conflict and called for the start of peace negotiations. Moscow launched its operations in Ukraine exactly a year ago, citing the need to protect the people of Donbas, a predominantly Russian-speaking region of eastern Ukraine, and Kiev's failure to implement the 2014-2015 Minsk Peace Accord. Speaking before the UN General Assembly meeting, Vasily Nebenzia reiterated that Russia launched its special operation in order to end the 8-year war waged by the Kiev authorities against the people of Donetsk and Luhansk. The Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics broke away from Ukraine shortly after the 2014 Western-backed coup in Kiev. The two republics, together with two other former Ukrainian regions, eventually joined Russia after holding referendums in September. The website of Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. Iran's ambassador and permanent representative to the United Nations expressed Tehran's readiness to establish a group of cross-regional countries to help end the conflict in Ukraine which marked its first anniversary on Friday, 24th of February. Amir Said Iravani made the remarks while addressing the UN General Assembly's 11th emergency special session on the Ukraine conflict on Thursday. Iravani said that Tehran supports the idea of leveraging the Secretary-General's capacity, as mandated by the United Nations Charter, to establish a cross-regional group of independent, competent, impartial countries. The Islamic Republic of Iran is ready to contribute to this process. Amir Said Iravani added, "This can facilitate dialogue and help find a way out of the current impasse." Iravani stressed that Iran's position with regards to the war in Ukraine has not changed. "We are steadfast in our commitment of upholding the principles and purposes enshrined in the Charter of the United Nations, including the principles of sovereign equality and territorial integrity of all countries." The Iranian diplomat added, "We urge all parties to fully comply with their obligation under international humanitarian law, including taking constant precautions to protect civilians and critical infrastructure and facilitating access to safe and unfettered access to humanitarian aid for those who are in need." Noting that the ongoing conflict is detrimental to both parties as neither can earn any long-term advantage, Iravani added that it is crucial for all involved parties to abandon the military ambitions and prioritize finding a peaceful diplomatic resolution of the conflict. Amir Said Iravani also pointed to the need to solve the root causes of the conflict. He said, "By prioritizing dialogue and diplomacy and addressing the underlying cause of the conflict, we can take a crucial step towards achieving a solution that not only mitigates the devastating humanitarian part, but also restores regional stability and security." Iravani added, "As a first step, we call for an immediate and comprehensive ceasefire, coupled with the provision of humanitarian aid to those in need, which should take precedence over all else." The Iranian diplomat also criticized the draft of the proposed resolution, saying, "Unfortunately, the proposed text falls short of comprehensively and impartially addressing all aspects of the issue and fails to acknowledge the conditions and provocations that have contributed to this crisis." He noted that the actions and policies of certain sponsors of this resolution raise doubts about the political will to resolve the dispute peacefully. Russia has been carrying out a special operation in its neighbor since last February. Moscow says the operation aims to stop Kiev's persecution of pro-Russian population in eastern Ukraine and to denazify the ex-Soviet Republic. The Republic World website has also covered this story and tells us more. The United States has announced sweeping sanctions aimed at increasing economic pressure on Russia and reducing Moscow's access to critical technologies such as semiconductors as the war in Ukraine enters its second year. In a statement on Friday, 24th of February, the White House said the sanctions, which target sectors including banks and the defense industry, affect more than 200 individuals and entities, including both Russian and third country actors across Europe, Asia, and West Asia who support Russia. The Biden White House said among those subject to new sanctions, which come on top of multiple layers of previous measures imposed over the last 12 months, will be a dozen Russian financial institutions, in alignment with allies and partners, as well as Russian officials and proxy authorities operating in Ukraine. The White House said today's action would result in increased tariffs on more than 100 Russian metals, minerals, and chemical products worth approximately $2.8 billion. It will also significantly increase costs for aluminium that was smelted or cast in Russia to enter the U.S. market. In the statement on the occasion of the anniversary of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, NATO's military alliance said it is increasing its political and practical support to Ukraine and will continue the aid as long as necessary. Meanwhile, the European Council, which brings together European national leaders, announced in a statement that the European Union will not rest until Ukraine wins the war with Russia. The Council has emphasized that it will continue to support Kiev along with its international partners until it ensures that Ukraine will win against Russia. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has repeatedly warned that the Western sanctions and Western military assistance for Kiev will only prolong the war.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The streets of the Yemeni capital were poured with a huge number of Yemeni protesters who came out to express support for Yemen's late president, Saleh al-Sammad. Saleh al-Sammad was assassinated by the Saudi-led coalition back in 2018. He is hailed here as Yemen's martyred president.
We came out today to express solidarity and loyalty to the martyred president who sacrificed his life on the path of Allah. And we say to the killers of al-Sammad, your criminal and reckless atrocities has given new life to a nation. The Yemeni people will accept nothing but the just punishment against the perpetrators.
Protesters also express solidarity with Palestinians who are suffering from Israeli regime attacks and crackdowns. Yemen's main cause is the Palestinian cause, according to government officials who addressed the crowd at the rally.
To the Palestinian people, we say, your blood is our blood, and our blood is your blood. Every drop of blood that is spilled in the land of Palestine is a drop of blood being spilled here in Yemen. Any oppression Palestinians face is considered oppression that is happening to us and every honorable Muslim.
The Palestinian cause will always remain dear and deep in the hearts and souls of the Yemeni people.
The latest protest in Sana'a comes in the midst of ongoing political efforts by the UN Special Envoy to Yemen to reach a deal between the Yemeni government and the Saudi-led coalition to end the conflict. Even if the war comes to an end, the Ansar Allah-backed Yemeni government will continue to face many challenges from world powers, given its unequivocal support for Palestine.
Despite 8 years of war and a strangling blockade that has stirred Yemen into becoming the world's worst humanitarian crisis, tens of thousands of Yemenis remain defiant and showing support for the Palestinians who remain occupied by the Israeli regime. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Stop the war! Stop the war!
Thousands of kilometers away from the front lines of the Russia-Ukraine war, an appeal for peace from central London.